Welcome back to Audio Notes. I'm Dmitry Atapin.
And I'm Haeyeon Park. And we're delighted to guide you through the fifth program of the Music in Menlo 2025 season, Constellations Ensemble Magic, the program titled Quartet Collection.
In David Finkel's words, throughout history, the string quartet has offered composers a vehicle for their most compelling and deeply personal musical statements. The dynamic young Viano Quartet returns to Music at Menlo for a panorama of string quartet works.
The string quartet is often called the most perfectly balanced of all chamber ensembles. Four equal voices in conversation, giving composers an extraordinary space to explore clarity, complexity, and emotional depth. Over time, this form has become a place for composers' most private and profound expressions, often shared in intimate settings away from the public eye.
We open the program with Haydn's String Quartet in D major, an elegant and inventive piece by the composer who essentially created the form. Mendelssohn's Opus 44 No. 1 follows, music full of warmth, sparkle, and lyricism, composed at the height of his artistic powers. Then comes Webern's Langsamer Satz, a deeply heartfelt and tender work from his early years. And finally, we close with Shostakovich's Ninth Quartet, a work filled with intensity and resilience.
This program not only challenges the performers with its remarkable range, but also invites our audience to experience the evolution of the string quartet, a journey through some of the genre's most powerful landmarks.
Before we dive into each and every piece, here is what violinist Hao Zhou of the Viano Quartet wanted to share with us about the importance of string quartets and each piece on the program.
What's very special about string quartets is that in the minds of a lot of composers, they think of string quartet as a way to convey something that's very personal. And that's true of every single piece that is on this program. Each piece is inspired by something that was incredibly profound, or it was inspired by a really great moment in each of these composers' lives. For Haydn, he had just returned from London. Every trip he goes to London, he learns so much. He's such a curious person by nature. And you can hear that freshness in all of the Opus 76 quartets, and especially in this one. You can hear how, even though he's such a seasoned composer, he's still able to create new things that sound really fresh to people. The Mendelssohn, this was a period in his life of great joy because his wife had just given birth to their new child. And you can hear that in all the Opus 44s, but this one has so much exuberance and joy in it. The Webern gets very celebratory, and also the Shostakovich has some sort of autobiographical tendency to it. And I hope that's what people enjoy as they hear this music.
The program opens with Joseph Haydn's String Quartet in D major, Opus 76, No. 5. Often called the father of the string quartet, and indeed the father of chamber music, Haydn was born in 1732 in Austria and is remembered as one of the most influential composers of the classical era. Over a career spanning more than half a century, right up until his death in 1809, Haydn composed over 100 symphonies, nearly 70 string quartets, some 45 piano trios, along with operas, masses, keyboard sonatas, and countless other works, laying a musical foundation that shaped the course of Western art music for generations. It was Haydn who truly established the string quartet as we know it today. He formalized the four-movement design, pioneered sophisticated thematic development and motivic interplay, and infused the genre with his distinctive blend of humor, wit, and emotional depth. His quartets not only revealed the expressive potential of the ensemble, but directly inspired younger contemporaries such as Mozart and Beethoven, who both deeply admired and learned from his work. Into the Romantic era, Composers like Schubert, Mendelssohn, and Brahms continue to build upon the rich quartet tradition that Haydn had established. The D major quartet, Opus 76, number 5, is part of his celebrated Opus 76 set, composed around 1797 for Hungarian Count Joseph Erdödy. These six quartets are widely regarded as among Haydn's greatest contributions to the genre. Here is violinist Lucy Wang of the Piano Quartet speaking about the work.
The set of Opus 76 string quartets were Haydn's last complete set of quartets. And at this point in his life, he was over 60 years old. He was finished his tenure at the Esterházy Palace, and he was also, at this point, probably the most renowned composer in all of Europe. And so in this piece, you hear very mature Haydn. But at the same time, even though he is such a seasoned composer at this point, he doesn't just do the same old thing. He always keeps it fresh. He keeps on experimenting and surprising audiences and also just pushing the boundaries of this genre that he very much popularized.
The first movement, marked Allegretto, opens with a graceful, lilting melody in 6/8 time. It has the feeling of a gentle pastoral dance. But instead of following the usual sonata form, Haydn structures this movement as a set of variations, a highly unusual feature showing his innovative spirit even in his maturity. As we move forward, listen for the D minor episode introduced by the cello. Here, Haydn weaves the material into a delicate web of contrapuntal imitation, the voices chasing and echoing one another. Then, after a brief pause, Haydn shifts gears. He quickens the tempo for the coda, where he draws on the material from that earlier D minor section, developing and transforming it into an intricate web of counterpoint reminiscent of Bach. The second movement is marked Largo, and notably, it's set in the rare and ethereal key of F-sharp major, a choice that gives the music an otherworldly glow. Here again is Lucy Wang.
The second movement is the keystone of the entire work. This movement is marked Cantabile e Mesto, which is translated to songful and melancholy. And in this work, he goes for a very unusual key, F-sharp major. And for the strings, you don't get the extra resonances of open strings. And so what it creates is a very intimate and very tender sound. The melody is absolutely gorgeous, very songful and lyrical. And there are also moments where it's very hymn-like and choral in texture in this movement. The nickname for this quartet is the Largo, and it comes from this movement. And so that really speaks to how significant this movement is for this work.
Thank you. We return now to the bright key of D major for the third movement, the minuet. This is no stiff court dance. It's a convivial, spirited romp full of sudden dynamic shifts that keep both players and listeners on their toes.
The third movement is quintessentially Haydn. It sounds very jolly, but at the same time, he has his signature mischievous charm, and you can really hear that in the way that he plays with the meter.
In the trio section, we slip into D minor, where the cello introduces an enigmatic, shadowy figuration. And then we are off to the final movement, presto. Haydn kicks things off with one of his favorite musical jokes, opening with big, ending-like chords and well-timed pauses, as if the piece is wrapping up just as it's getting started.
The final movement, he surprises us yet again. He begins with these very dramatic cadential chords, and they are all separated with this dramatic silence. And it really creates this feeling of suspense at the beginning of the movement before we launch into the rest of the movement. It's extremely brilliant and very virtuosic, and I think it's really fun, and it's one of the most exciting last movements that he ever wrote.
Next on our program is Felix Mendelssohn's String Quartet in D Major, Opus 44, Number 1. The three quartets of Opus 44 were composed between 1837 and 1838, when Mendelssohn was just 28, but already 10 years after his earlier Opus 13 quartet. This was a period of remarkable success and happiness in his life. By that time, he was already the conductor of the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, a post he'd held since 1835. His oratorio, St. Paul, had been a triumph in 1836, and Mendelssohn was firmly established as a respected composer, conductor, pianist, and musical advisor, admired by both the public and royalty. And to top it all off, in 1837 he had just married and settled into a new home in Leipzig. This D major quartet absolutely radiates brightness and joy. It shares the same key as the Haydn quartet we heard earlier in the program, and also matches the key of Mendelssohn's second cello sonata featured in the first concert of the festival. Themes of conquest, vitality, and triumph over darkness run through this music. Interestingly, although this was the last of the three Opus 44 quartets Mendelssohn completed, he chose to place it first when publishing the set, perhaps because its fervent, impassioned joy made it the perfect work to fling open the doors of his mature quartet writing. Now, let's hear again from Hao Zhou, violinist of the Vienna Quartet, as he shares his thoughts on this work.
This Mendelssohn quartet that's so exuberant and it has so much energy, What's so unique about Mendelssohn is that he combines a very youthful virtuosity, but he's also got a lot of emotional wisdom, especially in these quartets, even though he wrote them when he was quite young. I think one thing that I always find very striking about Mendelssohn is that his melodies and his motifs are very exciting, and you're always wondering where the piece is going to go next.
The opening movement, marked Molto Allegro Vivace, grabs the listener's attention right from the start. The first violin soars with an energetic, sweeping gesture, while underneath, the group propels forward with relentless, shimmering tremolo. It's a thrilling, bright start, a burst of Mendelssohn's signature brilliance and lightness.
The first movement, right away you're sent into the stratosphere, and it's incredibly exciting. There are 16th notes everywhere, and in between these bursts of virtuosity, there are these undulating eighth notes. The second violin is the one that has them for the first time. They sound like the musical ship that's carrying you between section to section. It's very virtuosic, and there are technical parts that are very difficult, but musically, it flows like water, and it's a real joy to play.
What's especially striking in this movement is how Mendelssohn introduces the second theme group. Traditionally, in the sonata form movement in D major, we would expect the second theme to appear solidly in the dominant key, A major, still happy and still shining. But here, Mendelssohn does something unconventional. He brings in the chorale-like second theme softly, in F-sharp minor and in pianissimo, almost disguising this entire theme group as if it's just part of a transitional passage. It's truly astonishing how masterfully Mendelssohn shifts moods and textures. One moment you're caught in a headlong race, the next one you're drawn into a soulful soliloquy. Suddenly, you find yourself surrounded by a serene chorale, only to be swept up moments later in a burst of joyous celebration. Just as an example, the development section uses incredible instances of imitation and conversation between the instruments, as if drawn directly from Bach's contrapuntal playbook. Every single moment offers something special, something unique, and something unpredictable. It's overwhelming in its sheer inventiveness. The second movement, Menuetto un poco allegretto, is graceful and gentle, beautifully highlighting Mendelssohn's gift for delicate charm and transparent textures. From across all seven of Mendelssohn's string quartets, this is the only one that includes a movement titled minuet. Yet despite the name, it doesn't really conjure the feel of a traditional dancing minuet. Instead, it unfolds as a refined lyrical interlude, more a moment of graceful songfulness than formal courtly steps. Perhaps that's because it lacks the familiar grounded rhythmic foundation in the cello that we often hear in the minuets of Haydn. Let's listen. In the middle of the movement, the contrasting trio section introduces a wandering, searching character led by the first violin. This adds a touch of mysteriousness, pulling the listener into a more shadowy, unsettled space before returning to the graceful lightness of the opening. The third movement, marked Andante Espressivo Ma Con Moto, is truly the emotional counterbalance of the quartet. It's a wistful, slow movement in a sorrowful B minor, reminiscent of Mendelssohn's beloved Songs Without Words, with its gentle melody and intimate flowing accompaniment. Here, the first violin sings out a tender, fragile tune, while the second violin spins a constant, light staccato countermelody in 16th notes. Beneath them, the viola and cello weave a transparent texture with delicate pizzicati, making the entire movement shimmer with quiet, aching beauty. There's something absolutely magical about this melody. It's simple, and yet it pierces straight to the heart. It seems to gently ask for tears of melancholy to flow from the listener, wrapping together kindness, sorrow, resignation, and even a glimmer of hope. How does Mendelssohn do this? How does he capture all the most intimate, inexpressible emotions in just a few measured lines? That's what makes him a true genius. After one last delicate cadenza from the first violin, a final sighing gesture, the music settles onto a quiet, resigned pedal point, gently bringing the movement to rest. Thank you. What a jolt of joy! That's exactly Mendelssohn's intention, to jolt the audience and throw us headfirst into the finale, presto con brio. It's a brilliant, high-spirited rondo that echoes the celebratory feeling of the first movement. With its lively 12/8 meter, it has the swirling, infectious energy of a tarantella dance. The movement bursts with playful exchanges, sudden dramatic turns, and that unmistakable effervescent spirit we know from Mendelssohn. It's a thrilling ride all the way to the finish. As the finale unfolds, Mendelssohn cleverly weaves in short passages of contrapuntal texture, creating a layered, energetic exchange before shifting into the contrasting, chorale-like serenity of the second theme group. This use of contrapuntal writing, especially in the transitions, is something we already hear in his octet, which he composed 12 years earlier, a work we'll encounter in the final concert program of this festival. That constant, motor-like rhythm gives the movement tremendous drive, propelling the music straight toward its conclusion. But what's so remarkable here isn't just the music, it's also Mendelssohn's compositional mastery. In the coda, he pulls together everything, the first theme of the finale, echoes of the first movement's theme, and masterful contrapuntal techniques, all combining and building towards a truly satisfying, exuberant ending.
Anton Webern's Langsamer Satz, German for slow movement, opens the second half of the program. Webern, an Austrian composer born in 1883, is best known for his short, delicate, and astonishingly concise atonal works of the early 20th century. The Langsamer Satz comes from an earlier, more romantic moment in his life. Written in 1905, when the 21-year-old Webern had just begun his studies with Arnold Schoenberg, this piece is steeped in the yearning, highly chromatic, and disintegrating tonality of the late Romantic era. On Gilbert Kalisch's Carte Blanche concert later this year, you can trace this curious compositional transformation from Romanticism to Serialism. Here is Lucy Wang, violinist of the Vienna Quartet, speaking about the piece.
When we think of Webern, we think of the Second Viennese School and 12-tone composition and serialism. But this work, the Langsamer Satz, was written in 1905 when he was just 21. So it's a very early work. And you can really hear his romantic roots. You can hear it in the lush harmonies and in the sweeping melodies. When he was a third-year student at the University of Vienna, Webern fell in love with his cousin. And they went on this hiking trip in Lower Austria, and Webern wrote in his diary these words: "Our love rose to infinite heights and filled the universe. Two souls were enraptured." This work, Langsamer Satz, is in a similar tone as a diary entry, and he really pours out his heart in this piece. This piece shows a composer that at such a young age, he is already a master of writing for the string quartet, and he's not at all scared of writing lyrically, and he really wears his heart on his sleeve.
This piece unfolds in a traditional three-part ABA form with a coda. From the very opening, it is masterfully ambiguous in terms of tonality. Its opening melody seems to exist in both C minor and E flat major at once. And in fact, the entire movement shifts repeatedly between the stark C minor and a warm E flat major. Violinist Hao Zhou also shares his thoughts on the second theme of the piece and its similarity to the work of Webern's teacher, Arnold Schoenberg, Verklärte Nacht, or Transfigured Night, probably the most transformative work for strings of late Romanticism. The similarities between the two works are uncanny.
The way the second theme is presented is so gorgeous. And in contrast to the first theme, the second theme, the motif is so simple. It's just three notes that are descending, followed by the rise of a fifth. It's something that's really powerful. It's something that sounds really tender. And the way he builds the second theme into the climax of the movement is really extraordinary. Actually, there's a spot that sounds a lot like Verklärte Nacht, where he has the second theme scream out really loudly in this kind of augmented harmony. And then after that, he has this cascade of tremolo that I think there's a part of Verklärte Nacht that's very similar, where it sounds augmented and then it crests into this big tremolo in the first violin and then the cello. And the way the second theme gets resolved in the climax is really powerful, because in the climax, it's no longer three descending notes followed by a leap up. It's three descending notes followed by a leap down, which sounds like some sort of acceptance or some sort of surrender. And it has a really, really cathartic effect.
Thank you. emotional climax arrives towards the end of the third section, where you will hear the music charge upward, ecstatically reaching for its emotional peak, before settling into a quiet, tender conclusion. Remarkably, this work wasn't performed publicly until May 1962, 21 years after Webern's death. He likely considered it as a student work and, we may theorize, in the shadow of the great Schoenberg and his transfigured night. Langsamer Satz is an incredible example of how a younger composer learns new tools of the trade, while imitating a masterpiece, transforming it and making it his own. Webern's style would soon experience an immense change towards concision and brevity. Because of this, curiously, at just around 9 minutes, Langsamer Satz is the composer's longest surviving work.
The Quartet Collection program concludes with Dmitri Shostakovich's String Quartet No. 9 in E-flat major. Shostakovich was a towering figure of 20th century music, a composer whose life and work were deeply entangled with the political and cultural pressures of Soviet Russia. Born in 1906 in St. Petersburg, he was hailed as a prodigy from his teenage years, rising to international fame in the 1930s with landmark works like his First Symphony and the opera Lady Macbeth of Mstensk. His relationship with the Soviet regime was complex and perilous. Twice officially denounced by Stalin's government, Shostakovich became a master of musical irony and double meaning, crafting works that could outwardly align with official expectations, while secretly encoding deep, private resistance and commentary. His 15 string quartets stand among his most personal and profound achievements, offering an intimate and cryptic counterpart to his large-scale public symphonies. Across these quartets, we trace the arc of his life, marked by triumph, terror, irony, sorrow, resilience, and dark humor. Composed in May 1964, about 11 years before his death, the Ninth Quartet belongs to Shostakovich's late creative period. By this time, he was a man marked by decades of surviving censorship, political oppression, and deteriorating health, yet still producing works of astonishing complexity, intensity, and depth. Together with the 10th Quartet, the 9th marks a turning point leading into his final cycle, numbers 11 through 15, which would take on an even darker, more introspective tone. The 9th Quartet is a 5-movement work, lasting about 27 minutes, performed attacca, continuously without pause, creating a sweeping, unified arc of interwoven themes and musical ideas. Compared to the dark, brooding colors often associated with Shostakovich, the 9th Quartet opens with a suspenseful mood. The moderato con moto begins with a small, oscillating 8th note figure in the second violin, a direct quote from Mussorgsky's opera Boris Godunov, where the monk Pimen appears in Act 1. Thank you.
the first movement is like a table of contents to the rest of the work, almost like a narrator is introducing the story in the very beginning. The order in which the motifs are presented, there's this lyrical motif that starts in the first violin, and then it progresses to music that's more staccato and more rhythmic. And then after that, the first violin has some really stark pizzicato.
Music slips seamlessly into the Adagio second movement, a searching, haunted space filled with echoes of Orthodox chants. With its desolate lines and sparse textures, it offers a chilling sense of isolation and intriguingly hints at surrealist techniques which Shostakovich integrates into his own deeply expressive language.
He tends to, I think what he does is he introduces a motif at the end of one movement that becomes the main motif of the next movement. And at the end of the second movement, there's this stepwise motion that happens in one of the violin parts. And then that becomes the main feature that launches the polka in the third. The Allegretto third movement sharply contrasts the preceding mood, transforming the end of the second movement into an edgy, energetic polka in the key of F sharp, full of biting humor and grotesque cheer. The third movement is this really quirky polka, and you can hear this galloping motif in the middle that's very reminiscent of William Tell.
Without pause, the quartet plunges into the somber and weighty Adagio fourth movement, a profound moment of introspection and heaviness.
The fourth movement, it's an example of when the P-men motif comes back, except instead of going upward, it's coming downward. And so that gives the whole movement more of a pleading feeling. And the theme that's presented in the opening is the same theme that he used in the film score to Hamlet when he was writing about the death of Ophelia. And it's very mournful, very impactful in a profound and deep way. I think a really iconic feature is those really nasty pizzicato chords that happen in the viola, the second violin, and then eventually culminate in the fifth movement where the whole group does them all together.
Finally, the Allegro fifth movement bursts open with wild kinetic energy, launching into demonic dances and furious momentum. This last movement pulls together threads from across the quartet. A folk dance acts as an interlude. Before reaching a climax in the form of a fugue. After the fugue, a dramatic cello cadenza brings a moment of heightened introspection. The ominous pizzicatos make their return. Then comes one of Shostakovich's most thrilling finales, over 100 bars of relentless crescendo driving toward an explosive fortissimo conclusion. Thank you. Throughout this piece, Shostakovich peppers the score with allusions, fragments from Mussorgsky's Boris Godunov, the galloping rhythm from Rossini's William Tell Overture, echoes of his own 8th string quartet, gestures from his first cello concerto, and even musical lines from his Hamlet film score. This is a tremendous work, rich, vibrant, ecstatic, and yet solemn, shadowy, and introspective. Here, as a mature composer, Shostakovich pours all his soul into his music. This concludes our discussion of Concert Program 5, Quartet Collection. A special thank you to Amy Kota for her immense help in procuring the audio samples, to the organizations who provided access to their catalogs, and to the artists who agreed to share their thoughts on the music. I'm Dmitry Atapin.
And I'm Hayeon Park. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you at the concerts very soon.
Audio notes are written and produced by Dmitry Atapin and Hayeon Park in consultation with David Finkel and Wuhan. Many thanks to the members of the Vienna Quartet, Lucy Wang and Hao Zhou, for speaking with us for this session. Audio excerpts are courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Haydn String Quartet in D Major, Opus 76, No. 5, performed by the Orion String Quartet, courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Mendelssohn String Quartet in D Major, Opus 44, No. 1, performed by the Kalidor String Quartet, courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Bibern Langsamer Satz for String Quartet, performed by the Kalidor String Quartet, courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Shostakovich String Quartet No. 9, Opus 117, performed by the Jerusalem String Quartet, courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Music at Menlo.